Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Polygreens podcast. I'm here, Joe Swartz with Amhydro, and I'm here with Nick Greens of the Nick Greens Grow Team. And Nick and I have worked together a number of times for quite some time, and we've seen a lot of changes and interesting things going on in the industry. But one of the most important fundamentals that has not changed at all in all of our time in the industry is how good horticultural basics combined with the right technologies can provide really, really great solutions for many different types of controlled environment agriculture. And with a lot of podcasts and a lot of information that's out there right now, many times you're hearing from some technology provider, someone trying to sell a certain type of system or a certain module or a certain technology. And one of the things that in my travels and my work as a commercial grower, always led me to see that there's always been this missing piece, and that's kind of the voice of commercial growers. And when I first connected with Nick, we were working on a project, and Nick was a hardcore grower. You didn't hear from him. You didn't see him. He was in the grow room. He was in the greenhouses, and he was growing. And ever since that time, neither Nick nor myself have stopped growing. And we decided to get together on this podcast and really present some information to the viewers that's applicable to novice or new growers up to advanced high-level growers alike. And it really focuses on the needs of commercial crop production and the different technologies that we can use that. So Nick, maybe you can tell everybody a little bit about your background, and we can kind of start talking about some basic fundamentals.
Sure. There's a lot of people out there already know who I am. But I've been, I'm a horticulturist, and I, just like Joe was saying, I am a hardcore grower, that turned horticulturist. But I started off as a volunteer, at a non-for-profit. And then from there I started to, dabble into microgreens, and I was just hooked. Before I got into, microgreens and volunteering, I, came from the cannabis industry where I learned a lot about flowering and cloning and I mean, you name it, A to Z and growing cannabis. But now I'm in the food industry, and I'm here to provide all the knowledge that I got from the cannabis industry to the food industry now.
So that's really cool. And that's valuable information. And again, Nick's time has been in the grow room, and his education has been from observation, from trial and error. As a grower myself, I can tell you the most valuable information that I've got didn't come from the most impressive successes. It's come from the most spectacular failures, and I'm sure Nick can attest to that. You learn very quickly that the plants are a living, breathing organism in a very dynamic environment. And it's easy to get kind of seduced into the mindset that if you have a certain type of system, you plug it in, turn it on, and everything grows. Horticultural management is very intensive. The tools that we have in controlled environment agriculture are amazing, and there's a lot of them, and they allow us to do a lot of different things.
Why don't you let them know a little bit more about your background a little bit, you know?
Okay. I started out, I was a fourth generation farmer. I grew up on a small farm here in Western Massachusetts. And as I was kind of, you know, coming through school and, you know, I had decided already, I mean, farming was in my blood. I wanted to grow. I grew crops all my life. And, but there were some real challenges. We had a small farm. We were in a college town. So it wasn't, we couldn't purchase additional land. We had a, you know, very small acreage to work with. I was very interested even back then in environmental stewardship, conserving our water, maintaining, you know, utilizing much less nutrients and any other type of chemicals that are used in agriculture, and also preventing them from getting in the environment. So that led me to hydroponics, which of course was really in its infancy back 36 years ago. And so I started to look at that. Now, my father and uncle, who were farmers, my uncle passed away early in his life because of pesticide-related exposures. He did all the spraying for the farm. My dad had a lot of physical injuries. So I was really trying to look at some form of agriculture that would allow me to grow in a safe environment, in a clean environment, using no pesticides, and hopefully in a way that I could grow with an extended season or even year-round. And so I built a greenhouse back in 1984 and built a hydroponic system and began growing and expanding that. And on less than a tenth of an acre, I spent many, many years supporting myself, putting myself and my wife through school and raising a family. And I was able to realize a lot of the different benefits that both environmental benefits and economic benefits that we see. And so that led me to consulting, much as you're similar to your background, Nick, where there was a real need in the industry for practical, usable information. People didn't want to hear as much from a company that was trying to sell you supplies or an academic who maybe had a lot of knowledge about plant culture, for example, but didn't understand anything about running a farm or a farming business. So I had a kind of a unique background, and people kind of gravitated to that and looked for help and information. So I began consulting and traveling all over the world. And in 2015, I was fortunate enough to join the team at AmHydro. AmHydro was for many years leading equipment manufacturer that focused on giving growers all the tools that they needed to succeed, which included a lot of customer support, a lot of good information, high level.
Do you know how many countries AmHydro's in now?
Well, we are now in 66 countries. We're about to open up a new farm in our 67th country. And we are on every continent other than Antarctica, but that's coming soon enough. But yeah, we're in 66 countries. We just last year built the largest commercial hydroponics farm in all of India. So we see in certain countries, especially here in North America, some very high level growing systems. And we also have some very basic and very simple lower technology systems. So we try to take the controlled environment ag technology that is most appropriate, or technologies that are most appropriate for every given situation. So installations all look different. Different applications are all fairly unique.
Oh, that's awesome. So let's get on. So the first episode, we're going to really focus on greenhouse and growing, well, just basically growing tips in greenhouse, right? We both worked in greenhouses. I got to work in some, research greenhouses and got to play with some of the cutting edge technology and stuff. So we thought that we would do the podcast today about the tips that we have and stuff. Do you want to start that?
Sure. So again, we had talked about, controlled environment agriculture is a whole group of different technologies and their tools. So we have to kind of stop and step back. And especially this is true whether you're a new grower or even an advanced grower, you really have to step back and look at the plant and look at the needs of the plant. Too often people feel that, or they lose sight of the needs of the plant because they're focused on a certain technology. So we have to always step back and look at all of our technological tools as what they are, they are aids to help us in providing what the plants need. So stepping back and looking at the needs of the plant and the needs of your crop production, you know, what your desired output is critically important. So Nick and I both decided that kind of the fundamentals of crop production, some of the things that you really need to look at, are very, very important to talk about. So they sometimes get lost in the shuffle. So really understanding your crops. So understanding, first of all, what you're looking to grow and what that end product looks like.
Yeah, like for instance, are they going to grow, let's say, for instance, arugula, but they want the arugula for the seeds, not for the green. So that's one thing that we're talking about, right? And then another thing is maybe you just want to grow the arugula as a microgreen. So there you go. There's another a whole different way. So that's kind of what Joel's talking about, is just to know your plant and know what you want out of the plant.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you don't really define what it is that you want out of the plant, you really can't provide the right things to get there. So obviously, and Nick, maybe you want to talk, especially with microgreens, but also with all crops, seed selection is critically important. Understanding mm-hmm. what your seeds are, what they do, the different varieties, real important. And Nick has a really great approach to that. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and you know, it is true. There is some seeds that are very hardier than others. And the best way that we started doing it over here, growing microgreens, was we started using larger seeds. Just because, you know, some of the smaller seeds, they're very delicate. Also with temperature as well. And I don't think people understand that temperature does have a big factor. You know, like there's some seeds that require to be in the freezer before you even use them. So I actually recommend to choose a larger seed, peas, sunflower, popcorn, you know, beets, you know, just larger seeds like that. And, you know, maybe you're growing them for the green, maybe you're growing them for the flowers, you know, get, you know, choose what you're growing them there, and then start down that road.
Yeah, excellent points. So really understanding that is important. And then once you have the right seed, giving them the right environment. And this is universal, regardless of what type of seed you're growing, is that in order to, one, seeds should be properly stored. So using fresh seed is important. If you use seed or hold seed for a long time in storage, and the storage temperature or humidity are outside of the ideal range, the viability of the seed starts to degrade. And that means that your seed germination is not going to be as good. Your emergence is not going to be as even, and that's going to impact your overall crop. So using high quality seeds, fresh seeds, storing them and handling them properly is really important. So you need to educate yourself on all the specific parameters around that. And then when you go to germinate them, the germination requirements, or the requirements or parameters around germination, are really very specific, and they change from seed to seed or variety to variety sometimes. So understanding what the moisture level in the growing medium, what the growing medium is, and the different characteristics. There are different growing mediums. Nick has talked a lot on his blog about different soil mixes and other inert growing mediums, and we can talk about that forever.
So say let's give one scenario right here. So say we're growing beets, right? We were growing beets, and we wanted the greens from the beets, and we're going to grow them in some AM hydroponic gust systems. What does that medium look like? What is the operator's choices?
So that's a great question. So if we're growing beet greens, there's a few things, depending on, again, the end product. So if you're growing baby beet greens or baby greens, or beets for microgreens, that's the same plant, but it's at a much smaller stage. And we have propagation systems that are part of our commercial systems that we actually use for microgreens productions. So basically the trays are filled with a mat. There's different materials that are used, and we germinate them and grow them to a certain stage. And when you're talking about baby greens or microgreens, this is at a very high density. So we use the right seed, we seed appropriately, and we grow them to that stage and harvest them. If we were looking to grow them larger, and there's a market for the bunched beet greens that are much larger, in a case like that, we would put that in a growing medium and actually transplant them into our NFT growing channels, because the growing channels are much more conducive to good nutrient delivery for a larger frame crop, because this is beet greens that are grown longer, they're in the system longer, they grow physically larger. So the type of system and also the type of practices that you use are really, really dependent upon kind of what your end product is going to be.
Yeah. And then I guess, like you just said right there, right, you were talking about density, right? So let's talk more about that. A best way for people to understand what Joe's talking about density is, we're talking about how far are the seeds spaced from each other, right? So this is just keep it very eighth grade here. So it's just how far the seeds are spaced from each other. So if you're growing a microgreen, then you want more dense, closer spacings. And if, like he said, if you're growing baby greens, you want them spread out a little more. And then when you're ready to transplant, you can transplant them to a little bit wider.
Yeah, and that's all a great point, because basically plants need adequate light. They need good air movement. And what that air movement does is that maintains temperature, that provides heating or cooling if needed. It helps move the transpirational rate. It helps remove excessive moisture. It keeps diseases down. And that's very, very important. And if they're planted too densely, that becomes impeded, and that's where you can have problems with poor growth or even disease incidence. So understanding how big these plants are getting will then kind of dictate the kind of spacing. Because in controlled environment ag, we always walk a balance. We want to maximize our density or maximize our production in a certain amount of area. So in a certain square footage, we want to get as many plants as possible. But that doesn't mean just cramming or planting as many plants as you can, because if the plants are too dense, they'll be competing for light. So they'll stretch, they'll become tougher. They won't have the same flavor or texture that you need. And if you plant them too far apart, generally you can get decent growth out of them, but then you're not getting the yields that you need. So it's a fine balance, and every variety is different, and every out come.
And at that point, they're stressing the plant out, and which means that other problems can start occurring as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. The minute plants become overcrowded, both physically, if they're physically touching a lot, or they start competing for water and nutrients or competing for light, yeah, they start releasing ethylene, for example. There are hormonal changes that happen in the plant, and that'll profoundly, especially if you're growing microgreens or baby greens for a specific flavor, that has a dramatic impact on your flavor. So if you grow your plants too dense, things like disease issues and whatnot are very, very common. But even just the quality, the eating quality, the nutritional quality, the flavor profile of your plants all can be impacted pretty substantially.
All right. So we were talking about, okay, so now let's just to run that back. We're talking about seeds, and we're talking about just know your product, your end product, and to do your research on that. So I guess another one we can talk about is location of the greenhouse and how that plays a big factor. And Joe, you're an expert at this because, I mean, I don't even know how many greenhouses you've been involved with in the beginning stages, but go ahead and take this one.
Yeah, I mean, I've been involved in thousands of greenhouse projects already. So your geographical location is very important. Now, a greenhouse structure, and this is, we hear this in the industry a lot, the kind of arguments of greenhouse versus indoor growing. And the concept of either the greenhouse or grow room is you're looking to provide an ideal environment for plants. And so greenhouses obviously are physical structures that are designed very specifically to provide optimum environment for plant growth. So they're obviously they're translucent. You have the ability to certain degrees with different equipment, limit or enhance the light coming to the plants, but you can also include ventilation, heating, cooling, all of those different things are accomplished by the physical systems in a greenhouse, or a structure like a greenhouse. But your physical environment your geographic environment is still very important because different areas of the country have different light levels, not only the length of day, the amount of hours of sunlight, but also the angle of the sun. Very, very cold climates require obviously much more robust heating systems and better energy conservation systems like a heat retention blanket, thermal curtains, different greenhouse glazing. And that's very different than what you'd maybe see in Bermuda, for example. So your geographic location actually plays a very, very big role in how you set up your greenhouse. And then once you have your system and your crop production, how you manage that crop is also very important, dependent on your geography.
You want to also talk about subsidized lighting and when we are in a location with a low amount of sunlight penetrating?
Yeah, well, right behind Nick, you can see the indoor system where the system and the plants are, the system provides the plants with all of the lighting that they need. So in a greenhouse, obviously, that's not the case. But in most areas of the country, most areas around the world, supplemental lighting to one degree or another will enhance growth. And again, with commercial farming, it's not an either or, where you either don't use lights or you just light the whole place up, is you use lighting appropriately. So depending on the needs of your plant, and going back to Nick's early point of understanding what your crop needs, lettuce, for example, needs between 17 and 19 moles per square meter per day of light. And that's an accumulation of light.
Let's take that one back just a little. And do you know the formula to break down the micromolds? And so you're, what type of meter that they need and stuff like that? Because I think a lot of people they think any light meter will just give them the readings right.
Yeah, it's a great point. So light is very important from a horticultural standpoint. And there's lots of different ways, you know, photographers measure light for taking photographs. And that's not really what we're looking for.
No, they measure in foot candles, right?
Foot candles.
Lux, yes.
So in horticulture, what we're interested in, what's called PAR, P-A-R, that's photosynthetically active radiation. And that is basically light approximately, not entirely, but approximately between 400 and 700 nanometers in wavelength. And that is most of the light that plants use for photosynthesis. So the light wavelength is very, very important in terms of horticulture. and other factors like the intensity of the light or the total accumulation of light. So for example, if you're growing lettuce, to get optimum growth, you need a certain amount of light. So you can have very, very bright sun for a short period of time or dull sun for a longer period of time within a 24-hour period, and it could still accumulate. You want to think about putting gasoline in your gas tank of your car. You need a certain amount of gas to go a certain amount of miles, and you want to think of it the same way with light. So we measure PAR, or photosynthetically active radiation, with a PAR sensor, and that will tell us the amount of light coming in as well as the intensity of the light. So again, going back to lettuce, just as an example, it has a certain need for in a 24-hour period, it needs a certain amount of light. And this is where we start managing our light better. So we have supplemental lighting in the greenhouse. And if we are not reaching that level, if the PAR sensors are sending the information from the day length and daylight back to the computer, and it's determined that the plants are not receiving sufficient light, it turns the lights on in order to supply that. And when that level has been reached, it shuts them back off. In the old days, growers would turn, in the winter especially, turn the lights on during the day and then turn them back off at night. And that's okay, but you're wasting a lot of light because you may be adding not enough light or you may be adding too much light. This is one of the great things that technology has enabled us now, is to understand how much light the plants need and then use the tools to actually provide that light, nothing more and nothing less. So the plants are getting optimum light and you're not spending any extra money on lighting.
And now that's called the DLI, what you're explaining, right?
Yeah, the daily light integer. Yep.
Yeah.
And so the what we're looking at is, again, only the light that the plants are using and in the amounts that the plants need. And if you're growing a fruiting crop like tomatoes, the light requirement is substantially different than if you're growing microgreens in a greenhouse, for example. In the system behind, maybe you want to talk a little bit about the system behind you and the lighting where you're providing sole source lighting or you're providing all the light that plants need.
Yeah, right there where we're using, right behind me, we're using GE lights, actually. They're pretty good light. And as you can see, there's different color spectrums going on there. This actual facility is still doing testing on a lot of their lights. But I kind of sold more on the white light than the purple and pinks, or the violet, I should say, just because I just feel that it's got enough blue in there to be able to veg them right. And microgreens don't need much. This is a microgreen farm, so it doesn't need much at all.
Yeah, for sure. And the lighting spectrum that you're providing with your lights, especially indoors, really should be tailored to what you're growing. Because if you're providing a lot of light that's outside of the spectrum, especially for vegetative crops, you're wasting energy. So we're always balancing economics versus productivity, and especially in social media, we hear arguments all the time that, this type of lighting is the right way to go, or indoor farming is the right way to go, or this way. And again, we really have to tailor all of what we put in, all of our inputs, to what we're looking to get out. So the type of lighting that I'm going to use in a tomato greenhouse is very, very different than if I'm growing microgreens indoors, like you see there.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so now I guess the most important thing is everybody understands that equipment is very important from this conversation here, and how valuable where you even set up your greenhouse and all your equipment and stuff. But I think another major tip that we can give is talking about taking care of the plants and what goes into taking care of the plants. Yes, the systems are set up to take care of the plants and provide the plants what they need, but you actually need a grower there to really understand those plants. The systems can't tell if the plant's healthy or not just yet. We're working on that, where we'll be able to use imaging. Actually, NASA's working on some imaging software where they'll be able to detect the plant that's actually sick and pull that plant before it even shows signs of sickness through frequencies, right? Which is very, very cool, but we're not there just yet. So let's talk about, on first, I guess let's talk about the consistency in watering and what goes into that.
Yeah, and to your point, that environment is so critically important, and irrigation in the root environment. One of the things that people tend to not focus on as much is the rooting environment. And one of the primary functions of irrigation, obviously, is within the rooting environment. So sometimes that's overlooked. So obviously, as it relates to traditional outdoor agriculture, you have very little impact short of adding irrigation to your field crops. With controlled environment ag, you have the ability to provide a very, very controlled amount of water in a closed loop system. So most systems, whether we're looking at an NFT system or an ebb and flood system or even a bag culture or Dutch bucket container system, what we're basically doing is pumping a nutrient solution. And the nutrient solution, again, is very, it's water, but it's also, you know, very specific nutrient formula for that plant. And the nutrient is allowed to flow through the root zone, and then it's caught in a collector and returned to the tank. So it basically completes this loop, and it's reused again, and it just continues to circle in a loop.
And I have a little trick that I do. You know, I used to always just go ahead and whack down the pH to almost get it to like where it really needs to be, and then I'm again whacking it down, and I just felt like I was always chasing the dragon with that one, right? Instead of me so now what I do is I gently slowly start bringing it down, like steps, right? And it's steps, and then I notice when I step down like that, it stays, and it's hard, and I don't see it go up much from that point. And then also, you got to also remember, if you have alkaline water and you start with alkaline water, it's going to tend to go up quick, really, really fast. But if you have a more of an acidic or neutral or base side, then that's a lot easier to get it to the sweet spot.
Yeah. And that's a great point about making those transitions, steady and more subtle rather than an abrupt change.
You know, they do that in with the fish, and that's where I kind of got that. You know, I have a friend that's you know, he's a fish guy, and they kind of do the same thing. They take their time to cycle the system with their water to be on. You know, when you're doing salt water, you got to cycle it through, and they take their time, because when they dial that in really, really slowly, it's hard to knock it out of its where it's at.
Yeah, because it's a complex balance. A nutrient solution and a hydroponic system, people have for a long time kind of seen this type of growing as sterile or industrial, and it's not. It's a living, breathing thing. And as soon as you change the parameters and you do it abruptly, it causes all kinds of changes that you can't necessarily see or smell or taste. And that's, you know, everything from the biology of the nutrient solution to the responses from the plants. The term thermal shock, you know, it's abrupt, it's sudden, it's detrimental to the plant. So you're right. So maintaining the the levels as closely as possible is critically important. But when you do have to make adjustments, trying to make these adjustments slowly and subtly is really important.
Yes. Well, I think we covered a lot here, Joe. I think we got episode one done. Hey.
So Nick and I were talking, and we're going to be doing live podcasts pretty soon, where we really want to engage people. We want to do, really robust Q&As. The only way to really advance this industry is to share knowledge and to help everybody with practical, usable knowledge. It's not, you know, the idea of trying to sell people on this or that, or trying to, you know, set this in stone that this is the right way and every other way is no good. It's really not productive. It's not helpful. What we really need to do is look at our technologies, again, to enhance our farming. And if you're growing, whether you're in a grow room, a shipping container, a greenhouse, on a roof, you're farming. And so we're growing crops. We need to grow crops ideally based on what they need. And then if we want to put in efficiencies or use other tools to make our lives easier, great. But if you don't focus on the plant, then pretty much everything else goes sideways on you.
Yeah, you are for sure. And we've been in situations where sideways was more like upside down for us at that point. But we will talk more about that. And we really appreciate you joining us here. And please don't forget to share this with everyone, and like and subscribe and all those good things, so you can get more updates. But we will be having episode two. And like I said, every week we will be doing a podcast. And like Joe said, we will be going live with the podcast so we can do Q&A. But this was awesome, Joe. Thank you. And the audience is going to enjoy this for sure.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Nick. I appreciate it. And it was great to be bringing some things to you. And we'll be talking again soon.